you've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Bufflin plays it back, Sahelabuck back for Bufflin, and Winnipeg wins a hockey game tonight to end a four-game losing skid. The final score in a hard-fought victory in Brooklyn tonight, Winnipeg 4, New York 2.
The final call from Thursday night's victory. The Jets defeating the New York Islanders by a 4-2 margin. As you heard Paulie Edmonds say, snapping the four-game losing streak at that point in time. Welcome, good morning, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you here in TSN 1290 Studios. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. We have a jam-packed 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. Tons on the Winnipeg Jets and a number of quality interviews, I can assure you, quality interviews that will get you set for your Saturday evening, Saturday afternoon of NHL action. So the Jets, the Thursday night, the road trip, which turns out to be an abbreviated road trip with the cancellation or the postponement of Tuesday night's game in New Jersey, is a 1-0-1 road trip for the Winnipeg Jets. Definitely, you know, too little, too late, but I suppose it is nice for the players to snap that four-game losing streak, you know, strike a blow against the New York Islanders in their quest to be a playoff team in the Eastern Conference, as the Jets were able to double them up 4-2 on Thursday night.
Yeah, nice win, and, you know, you use the word little, which is appropriate because Brian Little had the two goals in the first period, right, Drew? And if you're a Jets fan, you know this team isn't going to the playoffs, but you're happy with the way they played against the Islanders, and give Connor Hellebuck tons of credit for those two saves he made on John Tavares. Those were highlight reel saves, and I really thought that that was the turning point in the game. And you would say, well, the obvious turning point was, you know, Little getting the two goals and then Perreault getting the relatively early goal in the second there, guys. But really, I thought Hellebuck responded from, let's be honest, not a very good game in his last outing, right? So Connor Hellebuck, we know, has had an up-and-down year, and he was very solid for the Jets. He didn't need to necessarily steal the game later in the game, but on that PK, the Islanders could have easily gone up 2-0. So good for the Jets, and you know, you were right, Drew. It's a bit of a weird week this week. You thought you were going to have 3 games in 4 days, but the nature had something to say about that. So, again, a very good effort, and that's what you're happy about if you're a Jets fan. Five 20-goal scorers, and you know, you have individual performances to really look forward to right now. You have Patrick Laine going for the Rocket Richard Trophy and really trying to win the Calder Trophy more so, but a very impressive road effort, and it hurt the Islanders, guys. The Islanders needed that game, and the Leafs beat the Lightning the same night, so It was really one of those games where the Jets played the role of spoiler.
Yeah, and they were asked about that before the game. Matthew Perreault was said, you know, do you guys relish that role? And he said, well, that's pretty much what we have to look forward to. So, yeah, I guess, you know, playing the role of spoiler isn't a bad thing. And, you know, Brian Little, as he just talked about, had 2 goals, which gave him 20 on the season, which gives the Jets 5 20-goal scorers, which makes them the first NHL team this season to have 5 20-goal scorers, which, again, as Blake Wheeler has been talking about for quite some time, hasn't been a problem. Offense hasn't been a problem with this team, obviously. And, you know, Connor Hellebuck, I think he gave up the first goal on that first shot, which was, you know, a little bit of an unusual play. Obviously, you know, Dustin Bufflin ran into him just before that, and it seemed like he was caught a little bit, you know, almost a little bit shell-shocked because the shot beat him from quite far away, ways away. So you're thinking, oh boy, here we go again. Have we seen this you know, numerous times before.
Sure.
And then, as Ez talked about, he was very good for the rest of the game, and he stood fast, and he did what the team needed him to do, which is come up with some big saves, and he did just that. So it was an important game. Adam Lowry hit a career high in goals. I think he got his 12th, so that was good for him and his confidence. But, you know, I mean, it's a small
solace for a disappointing season.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And as he's right, now you have to kind of look towards individual success and maybe players playing a little bit, you know, because to me it's always like funny how they talk about, oh, well, as long as we can string this together, we can carry this forward. It's like, well, wait a second, you strung together four wins to end last year. And I'm just saying, like, you can't really use that argument because there's not necessarily
there's no correlation.
There's no continuity to playing well this to end April and then going into next season. They're two. I mean, we saw Brian Little gets injured in that first game, completely changes the Jets' season, right? So you can't really suggest that playing well to end the season is going to somehow impact September.
And I think the other player that you got to mention, Drew, is Nick Petan, because Nick Petan was a healthy scratch five of the last six games, and he picks up a really nice assist on Brian Little's second goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of steals the puck from John Tavares there. John Tavares overskates the puck. So I thought, you know, a guy like Nick Petan, you know, hasn't had the year that he's wanted, but in that game, you know, he's a guy that's playing for a job next year. We heard Paul Maurice say, we got to find out if Nick Petan is a center or a winger, and I think they're also trying to figure that out with Andrew Kopp. So Nick Petan had a really good game, and again, I think
had a goal. I mean, scored. It was, of course, disallowed on the offside as the Islanders challenged the offside. Then he had another one. I think it was later in the third period where I think he rang a shot off either the post or the crossbar. So he's definitely a guy who's a bit snake bit, but he was noticeable on Thursday night. That's for sure.
Yeah, and ideally, I don't think you want Nick Petan playing on the fourth line. But at this point, he just wants to show Paul Maurice that he's willing to succeed on whatever line he's on, right? And so he was very solid, and again, it was one of those just almost easy road wins for the Jets. They made it look easy in the second and third period. They just outplayed the Islanders. So you like that if you're a Jets fan, but really, these games don't mean much right now.
No, they definitely don't mean a ton, which is where the disappointment for Jets fans comes into play. And of course, we'll talk about that more throughout the course of the first hour, looking at the season, and we'll discuss Travis Yost's column, where he refers to the Jets as the most disappointing team in the NHL. That's after the break. We'll do that.
Drew, but how are they more disappointing than the Dallas Stars?
I know you're going to say it. Save it for next segment.
If Florida doesn't make the playoffs, how are they more disappointing than Florida? They won the division last year.
Look, your argument is certainly a reasonable argument, and I don't disagree with you, and we'll delve deeper into it next segment.
I just don't think there – sorry, Drew, I just wanted to say, I don't think there needs to be a most disappointing team, right? You could have five disappointing teams. Like, why do you need to put the title of most disappointing team on the Jets?
Well,
I don't get it.
I'm the most handsome member of Legal Curve. We could just said that all of us are handsome, but I have to be the most handsome.
Have Ezzy and I been dipped in acid? Like, I don't understand.
Let's look at the Western Conference playoff race, because we know the Jets are 10 points behind the St. Louis Blues with 11 games left. So mathematically, sure, but realistically, no chance at all.
But that's why the Jets aren't making the playoffs, because on the same night that the Jets beat the Islanders, the Blues and Kings both won, right?
Yeah, well, that's the problem with you can't fall that many points behind.
The reality, it's a two-horse race for one spot. I mean, that's what it is.
Well, and even the Kings, who are 4 points behind the Blues, don't have the tiebreaker on the Blues. Each team has 12 games remaining. I mean, even the Kings, a lot of people would say, are too far gone at this point in time. But I mean, it really is between those two teams, certainly. And you look at them, and I mean, they each have, you know, the Blues have a very easy schedule. Of the last 12 games, only two of the Blues' final 12 games are against playoff teams.
I think they play Arizona and Colorado like, four times?
They have three games against Arizona, and they have three games against Colorado. So
yeah,
six games against.
So 12 points.
Should be. I mean, you really do expect that you have six games against the two worst teams in the league, or two of the worst teams in the league. It's the St. Louis Blues playoff spot to lose at this point in time.
Yeah, and I remember when the Jets and were still somewhat being discussed about potentially catching the Blues, and I remember hearing that they had, at that point, seven games left against Arizona and Colorado, and you thought to yourself, well, how are you going to catch them when the Jets have to play playoff teams for the remainder of the stretch, and you know, St. Louis doesn't. So
seven of the Jets' last 11 games against playoff teams.
Right.
So if you're looking for a reason to be excited about going to MTS Center, at least you can watch other teams and play some decent hockey, or teams that are going to be playing in April, you know, into and potentially into May with the list of the games they have left. It really is looking like it's almost set in stone in the Western Conference, barring a significant St. Louis Blues collapse again.
Yeah, one of the more interesting races has got to be at the top in the Central, with Chicago and Minnesota trying to both win not only the division, but trying to win the conference. And you've got San Jose that's only 1 point behind Minnesota, and they're 3 points behind Chicago. So you're right, Drew. I think the race for eighth in the East is a lot more interesting, with the Islanders and the Leafs right there. And then you've also got the Lightning, I think, 1 or 2 points back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a much more interesting race at the bottom. But certainly, looking at Chicago and Minnesota, they've got to be considered, along with San Jose, favorites to go all the way, right? Because we just haven't seen any team in the Western Conference, aside from Chicago or L.A. or San Jose, do it in the last, what, 6 or 7 years? So I think the race is a little bit more interesting at the top there. And then you've also got Edmonton, who might end up in the first wild card spot, even though right now they have more points than the Nashville Predators. So I think those are the more interesting races. But certainly right now, I mean, to make up 4 points if you're the LA Kings is really difficult to do. Same amount of games played. But right now, I would agree. I think it's the Blues spot to lose.
You know, that's a team that you mentioned, the Oilers. And if you're the San Jose Sharks, and right now the Sharks would face the Oilers in the first round of the playoffs, I mean, you don't want to meet Connor McDavid in the playoffs. He can single-handedly, you know, turn a series on his head. And the way the Oilers right now are putting up goals, I mean, 14 goals in their last two games, something close to that.
And apparently, that's the first time since 1981
that they had
back-to-back 7-goal games.
Well,
but that's actually shocking, considering
you would think that in the 80s,
considering the Gretzky, Messier, Curry, Anderson, you know, et al. 80s, that how are you not having back-to-back 7-goal? You think that they would put that up in their sleep.
But
apparently not since 1981 had the Oilers put up 2 back-to-back games of 7 goals.
Which is, you're absolutely right. It tells you how scary they are. I mean, they're not going to shut you down defensively, but if they're able to get 4 or 5 goals a game, you know, in the playoffs where scoring is at such a premium, I mean,
that'd be a good series, huh? Sharks and Oilers.
What you're going to see is the guy like Mark Edward Vlasic would probably be tasked with trying to shut down, you know, one of the best, you know, sort of defensive defensemen in the league would be tasked with trying to shut down Connor McDavid. But just seeing Connor McDavid in the April spotlight, in the Stanley Cup playoff spotlight, is where the excitement comes to be.
I think Oilers and Sharks would be so fascinating, because that's classic offense versus defense, right? It's like the Patriots versus the Seahawks almost, because San Jose, as you said, I think they've allowed the least amount of goals in the entire Western Conference, if I'm not mistaken. And then you have Edmonton, who's third or fourth overall in the Western Conference as far as scoring goals. So it would be a very good series. But I don't think that any of these series really, the days of teams sweeping other teams, I think, is really over. I wouldn't be surprised if the majority of these series go to 6 or 7 games, and that's great. That's what you want to see, right?
So far this season, the Sharks have won 2, and the Oilers have won 1, and one of those games went to overtime. The Sharks won.
Lots to come, lots to still play itself out over the final 12 or so games of this regular season. When we come back, we'll discuss that Travis Yost column that Ezzy was referencing earlier. Are the Jets indeed the most, quote, disappointing team in the NHL? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's coming up next here on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And the puck is grabbed off and carried in. Dropped off for Chiasson. Scores! Alex Chiasson out on the line with Monahan and Gaudreau. Fires this one past Connor Hellebuyck. And the Calgary Flames have a 3-0 lead.
From last Saturday night, one of a litany of disappointing performances for the Winnipeg Jets this season. They lost, of course, to the Flames 3-0. This comes on the heels of a previous loss on a Saturday night at home to the Tampa Bay Lightning by a 3-0 loss. A disappointing year, undoubtedly, for the Winnipeg Jets as we're into the final 12 games of the season. But are they the most disappointing team in the NHL. Travis Yost of TSN.ca penned an article earlier this week. And in his defense, I will say that he doesn't... Well, he does say it right there. If there's one truth about the 2016-17 NHL season, it's that the Winnipeg Jets have been the league's biggest disappointment. Fair comment? Are they the biggest disappointment? Are they among a bunch of teams that have just been disappointing?
Well, again, though, this is his opinion.
Sure.
And I don't agree with him. And I mentioned that during the first segment, guys. Like, if we're talking about the most disappointing teams of the year, how do the Dallas Stars not end up being at the top of the list of disappointing teams? And it might be because I picked them to win the Stanley Cup. But again,
the kiss of death from the start of the season.
We always mention, like, our predictions don't mean much. I don't think that the Dallas Stars really care about my predictions. In fact, when you look at the other team that I picked to be in the Stanley Cup final, it was the Florida Panthers. So, again, terrible predictions for me this year. But, I mean, both of those teams to me are ahead of the Jets. Now, are the Jets a disappointment? Yes. I thought the Jets could make the playoffs, Drew. I was the one person on the show who predicted that the Jets would get into the playoffs. So, again, my predictions were terrible this year. But, I mean, let's be honest, guys. The Jets aren't completely out of it here. They've been out of it the last 2 or 3 weeks. But right up until the trade deadline, you know, the Jets were, what, 4 or 5 points, 3 points out of a playoff spot here. So it's not like the Jets are with the Arizona Coyotes and the Colorado Avalanche at the bottom of the Western Conference. I mean, this is a team that had a rough start to the year, especially in November, guys, when the Jets had 16 games and that terrible schedule. And the Jets put up a bad record in the month of November. What did they end up with, 5 or 6 wins in that month? So, I mean, it's been a disappointing year, but to call this team the most disappointing team, again, Travis is allowed to have his opinion. I just don't agree with him. And as far as what he mentions in the article, I mean, we know that the Jets can score goals, and we know that the goaltending hasn't been good. So I'm not really truly understanding what's new here in this article.
I think the headline's a tad sensational, and I think Ezra hits it on the head. I mean, the fact of the matter is that you either predicted the Jets to be in the playoffs just like a 7th or 8th seed or just on the outside of the playoffs, which is where they are. I don't know many people who are predicting the Jets to be Stanley Cup contenders this year. I don't know how many were predicting them to win the Central Division. So for me, again, the title is very sensational. It screams out, oh, they're the worst team. But they're not the worst team because, again, Ezra's right. When you're the Dallas Stars and you go from where you were to where they are, and same with the Florida Panthers,
if the Lightning don't make the playoffs, like, could you not make the argument the Lightning are the most disappointing team in the league?
I think the Lightning would get a bit of a pass without
Steven
Stamkos.
With all due respect, you can't diminish the loss of Brian Little. Yeah. I mean, Brian Little, again, we've seen what Brian Little's done. He has 20 goals in 48 games for the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, if you have Brian Little in this lineup the entire season, I would argue that the Jets would be a playoff team. Despite the fact that they've had shaky goaltending and not the best defense, I would argue that Brian Little, his presence alone would have gotten you probably, you know, a few more wins, enough to get to be closer than they are right now.
And again, Dave, I think Travis Yost is a good writer. I think he does an awesome job for TSN. In the article, he says no one could have predicted that the young forwards would be so dominant, and no one could have predicted the collapse of the middle of the Western Conference. And I think both of those statements are wrong. I think we expected Ehlers to have a great year. We expected Patrick Laine to have a great year.
Well, did you expect Patrick Laine to have this good of a year, this good of an impact, well, this much of an impact as an 18-year-old?
Go back to September when we did our over-under, Drew. I thought Laine could score 40 this year. I mean, you're talking about a generational player. You're talking about a guy who was the MVP in the Finnish League playoffs. I mean, this isn't your average prospect. You're not talking about, you know, a guy who you thought maybe could put in 15 goals or 30 points. I mean, this is Laine we're talking about
here. But from my perspective, and this is what's so, and I've said this before on the show, and I this is what's so frustrating about the Jets. I didn't have them as a playoff team. And the reason I didn't have them as a playoff team is I thought that there would be more of a learning curve for the younger players. So when their younger players exceeded that learning curve and were far better than I thought they would be for a pretty consistent, you know, stretch of the season, that's when I thought that they should be a playoff team. The thing I thought that was going to hold them back the most, their young players, didn't hold them back. And instead, that's why I think they're so disappointing from my perspective, is that what I thought was going to be their built-in excuse didn't manifest itself.
Well, and you also, I mean, again, we mentioned the goaltending, Drew. It has to start with the defense and goaltending. The goaltending took a step back.
I wouldn't
say that the defense necessarily took a step back, but I don't think they took a step forward either, right?
Well, they certainly didn't. Nobody. The defense they have played all season, the defense and the goaltending they have demonstrated all season is just not good enough.
And Josh Morrissey, we should mention. I mean, he's been excellent, and mm-hmm. I would argue that Jacob Trouba's probably taken a step forward mm-hmm. in his development because, let's be honest, last year he didn't have a very good year mm-hmm. offensively or defensively. So, I mean, yeah, the Jets are disappointing, but again, I think any team is going to be disappointed with not making the playoffs. Like, are the Avalanche not a disappointing team? Are the Coyotes not a disappointing team? Like, I would throw in, when you're talking about the Eastern Conference, the Flyers have had a disappointing year. They were in a playoff spot, and they've kind of tailed off. So as far as I'm concerned, I mean, again, you know, I just think when the Jets are named the most disappointing team, I think that you have to back it up with something here, and I don't think Travis is really backing it up with anything that we don't already know about. We know the goaltending hasn't been good.
Well,
we know the defense hasn't been good. And that's been the case in Dallas as well, right?
Sure.
So couldn't you just use these same arguments for the Dallas Stars?
Very likely you could. You're not incorrect with your comment there. I think if you take away the sensationalism of the headline,
right.
Let's take that away for a second. And there's, I think, the most interesting part that Travis touches on is the fact that it's pretty much a very similar forward group to what we had last year for the Winnipeg Jets. Not they've improved even with the addition of Patrick Laine. And, you know, the number that jumps out to me the most is that last year, in last season, also not a playoff year, they were 8th overall in the NHL in Corsi. And this year they've dropped down to 20th. And it's pretty much the same lineup. If anything, it's an improved lineup. Yet the Corsi number has fallen from the top third of the NHL to the bottom third of the NHL. And that, to me, is a concerning stat because there's no reason for that drop-off. When you're returning pretty much the same players, if not an improved group of players, there's no reason for why the Jets should have gone from a top-10 team to a bottom-10 team in Corsi. And I think that number and a number of the other sort of quote-unquote advanced stats that Travis presents are a significant cause of concern for Winnipeg Jets fans going forward.
Sure, and that's because we know that these stats are a reflection of how good a team is, but I think when you're the Jets, at the end of the day, what matters is that you're not a playoff team this year. I mean, I think they're aware that in certain games they haven't won the possession battle, right, Drew? But you're right. I mean, that's part of the game that has not been good. The 5-on-5 game, I think, at times has been inconsistent, so I mean, the Jets are aware of this, but, mm-hmm. I mean, it starts with the way they've played defensively. I think they give up too many goals. It's quite simple, right? How many times in the last month have the Jets given up 4 more goals?
It's a surprise. Let me put it this way. When they were up 4-2 against the New York Islanders on Thursday night, I thought it was certainly within the realm of possibility that they would lose that game 5-4 or 6-5.
Yeah, but, I mean, look, they have the second most goals in the Western Conference.
Scoring's not an issue.
But, no, and they've been talking about that all year. So, I mean, and Patrick Laine's numbers, advanced stats, aren't the best because he, you know, he's slowly but surely learning the game. So he's improved in that category. And again, I mean, I hate to sound like a broken record, but I would be very interested to see those numbers with Brian Little in the lineup and without Brian Little in the lineup. Because you cannot remove a center of his experience and replace him with who you're replacing Brian Little with. Nick Petan, Adam Lowry, Andrew Kopp. I'm just saying, like, they're not the same caliber as Brian Little. So you can't, I mean, it's not, look, Mark Scheifele has taken a step forward. There's no question about it. But the fact of the matter is, when you lose a veteran element at center, it's not like losing a winger. Wingers are, it's completely different. So when you lose a veteran center like Brian Little, who wins faceoffs, who gives you that puck to start the play, you just can't replace him. And then when you try to, with young players who don't have that same level of experience, you're not going to gain the puck, you're not going to gain possession. So when you're talking about possession stats and you're talking about not having a player like Brian Little for however many games Brian Little missed, I mean,
I think it was 23.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, again, I'm not saying that all their ills can be pointed to Brian Little and Brian Little's absence, but I'm simply saying that it's in my mind, it's a large part of the problem with those advanced stats would be simply not having a player of
Brian. So you would like to see the stats. Sorry for interrupting. You would like to see a breakdown of the stats, say, with Little in the lineup versus with Little out of the lineup.
And you're
taking the hypothesis that the stats are a lot better when Little's in the lineup and the Jets have their, quote, their full contingent of centermen.
Yeah, and again, I could be wrong. I haven't looked at the numbers specifically, but I would suggest, and I will after the show, and maybe I'll have an answer for you guys next time we talk. But
yeah, but you're going to Vegas. We might not see you for a while.
That's true. That's true. But anyways, I'll be gone for forever. But but the fact is that, again, my hypothesis based on this conversation would be that if you looked at the numbers with Brian Little in the lineup versus Brian Little without out of the lineup, they'll be vastly improved.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Dave. And he plays in all situations, right? Penalty kill, power play. We know how good he is at the faceoff circle, right? So, I mean, it would be pretty shocking if the Jets' possession numbers weren't better with Brian Little in the lineup. But, I mean, yeah, that plays a part, right? Everybody mentions when you talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning that they've been without Steven Stamkos, right? Mm-hmm. So why can't the Jets also mention that with Brian Little? I mean, I realize that the coaches and the players don't want to use injuries as an excuse, but you can't tell me that Tyler Myers' absence hasn't hurt the Jets this year. I don't think Buff would be playing as much as he's been playing. Buff has played more than anybody in the league this year, Drew.
Yeah.
He plays too much, and that's because Myers is a guy who plays 23, 24, 26 minutes a game, right? So the injuries to Myers and Little on a young team, I think, have played a big role. But, you know, there are other areas that are disappointing too. But these aren't things that we haven't talked about for the last month or two, right?
Yeah, longer than that. But anyways, food for thought.
Just in regard to this year.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And it'll be interesting to see. Well, it's going to be an interesting offseason here in Winnipeg. I think we all acknowledge that, and there's going to be something has to give at some point in time this offseason. And I think most people would point to the goaltending right now as an issue that has to change to some regard. Along those same lines, we're going to talk about goaltending coming up next. We'll do that after these commercial messages. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
An absolute terrific save off of Andrew Kopp.
A big save by Marc-Andre Fleury, followed by a big save by Chad Johnson. Two names bandied about as being potential solutions or parts of the solution for the Winnipeg Jets' goaltending woes, both of whom will be unrestricted free agents at season's end.
Welcome. By the way, Drew,
yes?
St. Patrick's Day can't be on a Friday.
It just was. Literally, it can be because it just was.
It shouldn't be is what I meant to say.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a separate issue altogether. You feeling a little rough there, big boy?
Yes.
Ah. Not as bad as the guy. I was walking the dog this morning before the show.
Mm-hmm.
8 a.m. Cab pulls up on the corner of the street, across the street from where I was. This guy just pours himself out of the cab. He's like, I don't know.
Wait, was it Rory?
It wasn't Rory. It wasn't producer Rory, but probably 23, 24-year-old. And he just sort of starts stumbling around the corner. And he's like, the cabbie's like concerned for his well-being. And the guy's like, go, go, he says to the cabbie. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, it's 8 in the morning. You could have called it quits a couple hours ago. And you still would have put in a pretty impressive shift. But, you know. Some people, and then St. Patrick's Day, it's, you know, amateur hour for some people.
Like, I don't know if you guys were at bars last night or during the day like I was, every single beer that I had, I got the green food coloring put in.
That's not good stuff to be ingesting.
The problem is when you go to a bar and they ask you if you want food coloring, but you've ordered a dark beer. There's no point in getting the food coloring because then it just looks like a dark, a greenish brown beer.
There's
right?
also no point in just getting the food coloring, period. It's
St. Patty's Day. You got to get the green beer.
Do you think there's any green beer being served in Ireland?
Oh, good question.
Do you think that if you walked into a pub in Ireland,
Ezzy's part Irish, so he should be able to answer that.
I've never been there, but maybe we should go to our Irish correspondent, Drew O'Mandel.
Anyways, hope everybody had a happy St. Patrick's Day and celebrated responsibly and everything else and can get back into the real world today on Saturday here, the 18th of March. We were talking about the goaltending situation for the Jets. I should mention that this segment is actually brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So I think everyone in this room would agree the Jets need to do something to shore up the goaltending position next season. Connor Hellebuck, young goaltender, had some flashes this year, also had some significant struggles. The two backup goaltenders this year, Andre Pavlik and Michael Hutchinson, are not going to be on this. They're not long-term solutions. Hutchinson's still with the organization next year, probably. Pavlik, unrestricted free agent, he won't be back. Fairly clear at this point in time. Question I have for you guys, is this a solution the Jets can solve by dipping into the free agency market where a guy like Chad Johnson is available, or is this a solution the Jets are going to need to solve by trading, by sending an asset and acquiring a goaltender like a Marc-Andre Fleury still under contract in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's the question we're really going to be asking here for the rest of the regular season going into the draft, because we know the Jets can't make any moves right now, right? So I think it's going to come via free agency. It could come via trade, but when you look at it right now, and it's a situation where the Jets have to bring in not just a second goalie to push Connor Hellebuck, Dave, but it has to be a veteran goalie that has experience playing 50-plus games in a season, right? So when you're talking about a guy like Scott Darling, for me, Scott Darling has been a backup for the most part in his NHL career. Chad Johnson, he's a guy that's been a backup for the majority of his career, but he has been a guy that has played, you know, 50 games in a season before, right?
He's played 34 for the Flames this year. He's, you know, with a 2.58 goals against average and a .912 save percentage.
Right, and Chad Johnson's a good goalie. And there are other guys out there. Ben Bishop is a guy that I think would be a great goaltender for the Jets. Marc-Andre Fleury is the big sexy name that's out there. But we know that it's going to take a trade for that to happen because he's still under contract, right?
Right.
And he could get selected by Vegas in theory.
Well, no, he's got a no-movement clause. So he'd have to waive his no-movement clause. And then if he... There's a lot of asterisks.
Well, they're not going to expose Matt Murray.
Well, that's the problem the Penguins have, is that they're in a rot.
They expose Matt Murray. I mean, that'll
be the
biggest mistake of the last 20 years.
They won't
years.
Expose Matt Murray. You're absolutely right. They won't do that. It's just they have to figure out how they're going to... Marc-Andre Fleury can call his own shot as to where he goes, is what I'm saying.
I suspect they probably had a conversation with him, though, and said, will you be willing, if we're going to keep you for this playoff run,
right.
Would you be willing to do that?
And the answer he probably gave them is yes, because he wants to be he doesn't want to be a backup goaltender at this stage in his career. He wants to play a significant number of games. I mean, my fear is that the Jets are, I mean, I think the organization would say, God help them if they wouldn't, but I think that they would acknowledge that they need to get what I would describe as a suitable number 1B goaltender to go alongside with Connor Hellebuck. My fear is that their definition of suitable and my definition of suitable are two different ones. I fear that they would go and get a goaltender like a Scott Darling, like a Chad Johnson, guys who have never really shown.
By the way, the most Chad Johnson has played in a season is 45 games last year for Buffalo. So he hasn't played 50 games in a year, but he certainly, you know, he's played 27 games back in 2013. But needless to say, Drew, I don't even know if they're looking for a 1B. I mean, is Connor Hellebuck 1B next year?
And maybe they're looking for a 1A. And if they're looking, and that's a good question, and that's a good point, because I'm not sure how they have assessed Connor Hellebuck and his long-term future as a Winnipeg Jets goaltender. But my fear is that they would go into the offseason and they would acquire a goaltender, but they acquire not one who can, you know, with all due respect to Chad Johnson, and he's having a nice year in Calgary. Did anybody ever really think of Chad Johnson as a quote-unquote answer for any team's goaltending problems prior to this season?
No, well, he's been a backup the majority of his career, right?
Right, and Scott Darling is a you know, he's young, he's only 28, but again, same question. Has he ever been, you know, has anybody ever pointed to Scott Darling and said, that's the goaltender I need to acquire to shore up my team's goaltending? It's not like the Oilers acquiring Cam Talbot when they thought that he would be a number one goaltender and clearly has proven to be a number one goaltender.
Right.
That's my fear for the Jets, is that they choose a goaltender that they think can do it, but doesn't end up, isn't able to do it. I want the, I think that they need to go and get a proven number 1A, 1B goaltender.
Right. And for me, that's Ben Bishop. And if you're asking me who I think the number one target is, and how many other guys of Ben Bishop's quality are out there right now, right? As far as being a free agent. I mean, so I don't think the Jets have like 10 or 15 different goaltenders to choose from. If it isn't going to be a guy like Ben Bishop, who you're probably going to have to pay, what, $5 or $6 million a year on a multi-year contract. I don't think he's going to sign a 1 or 2 year contract, probably at least 3 years. So for me, that's the free agent goaltender that really fits in with what the Jets need, right? Again, Scott Darling, Chad Johnson, great goaltenders. A guy like Steve Mason is a guy that could be an option. And again, I think right now you don't have a 1A. I think they want Connor Hellebuck to be a 1A, Drew, but right now, I mean, he just hasn't shown it. I mean, he had a great game against the Islanders, and you know, he had a shutout a couple weeks back and then played really well against Colorado after he picked up that shutout, almost had two shutouts in a row. So I think Connor Hellebuck is having a nice finish to the year, but we know midway point of the season, guys, he was struggling.
Yeah, I think you have to look at the long-term ramifications of these moves, and I think you guys are right. I think the fact is you bring someone in for a year or two to kind of stabilize the goaltending, because the fact of the matter is, if you listen to the audio from the team, and I do obviously because I'm in the scrums every game and during practices, you can hear the frustration in the team, because you know, as Blake Wheeler has said over and over again, scoring goals is not a problem for this team, but they have to play as a six-man unit and keep the puck out of the net. And now he's not throwing anybody under the bus,
right.
but it's pretty pretty obvious what the captain's saying, right? And the fact of the matter is that they just need better goaltending. And I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I watched Connor Hellebuck play all his games in the AHL last year, and with, you know, obviously with the Jets as well. And the fact is that I think he's a very good goaltender, but I think he was put in a position where he should have probably had a veteran playing ahead of him this year. I don't think there's any question about that. And they chose not to go that route. I think, again, they probably would look back and say that was an error.
Fundamental error,
yeah,
by the general manager.
But I think that if you're going to – but the reality is you have to move forward, and you can't lament the things you did wrong now. You have to kind of say, okay, well, what are we going to do right next year? So I think if you bring in that veteran goaltender – because the fact is, and it's one thing you kind of like push with most players, unless you're a generational Patrick Laine talent, you shouldn't be handed anything in the NHL. And I'm not even saying Patrick Laine should be handed anything, but I'm saying that his talent generally would merit certain opportunities that he might not get as a young player. But I don't know that you want to be creating a culture where players are handed things. And you want Connor Hellebuck to have to fight for that net. You don't want Connor Hellebuck to be the de facto number one goaltender at his age.
To your point, Matt Murray sort of stole the job from Marc-Andre Fleury in Pittsburgh, because he outperformed him. Now, he had this opportunity because of Fleury's injury and everything.
Right.
But that was a situation where a young goaltender wasn't handed the job. He outperformed the veteran to get it.
That's my point. I think that if you put – I'm not suggesting you bring someone in and you say, okay, Connor Hellebuck, you have to be the backup and you have to be an understudy. If that's the way it ends up working out, you know what, long-term
– internal competition.
But long-term, that's not necessarily a bad thing. If he has to spend a year learning, I mean, for all his bravado and his statements, the fact of the matter is he still has to learn the NHL game. It's very rare, you know, as we've heard from a number of goaltending experts – who have said, you know, it's very rare for a goalie to be handed the number one position with less than 200 professional games. And he was. And the fact is that we saw that, you know, there were games where he didn't look like he had the requisite experience to handle the position.
Another goaltender who I think would be a perfect fit, and his name's been brought up before, Yaroslav Halak. He's got 1 year left on his contract, and he didn't have a good start to the season. He's been tearing it up in Bridgeport. His numbers are excellent in Bridgeport. He might get called up by the Islanders because J.F. Berube has been struggling. So I think Yaroslav Halak, Drew, and Ben Bishop fit the profile of what the Jets need. Like, the Jets aren't going to get Antti Raanta, and they need a guy that's been a bona fide goaltender in the NHL. So they can't get a guy who's only got, like Dave said, 50, 60 games of experience, more of a backup role. The Jets need a bona fide veteran goaltender, and I think Halak and Ben Bishop, you can say whatever you want about those two guys, but they've got it done at the NHL level. Halak 3 years ago had 38 wins, right? So, I mean, Halak is a good goalie.
Yeah, and the one thing I'd also point to is long-term, again, looking at that, you have Eric Comrie in the system, but the fact is that Eric Comrie needs to play for the Moose for a few years. So, I mean, it's amazing to me how people already are writing off Connor Hellebuck and saying, well, let's talk about Eric Comrie. you shouldn't be talking about Eric Comrie. And I know Mike McIntyre from the Winnipeg Free Press wrote a very good article about Eric Comrie and how he feels that he's ready. And maybe he is.
I think every player would always say,
well,
they're ready.
That's, yeah, exactly. But I think that if you're – you shouldn't be looking – shouldn't be talking about Eric Comrie. Eric Comrie should be a Manitoba Moose to be developed within the system, and then you leave him alone, and then you focus on Connor Hellebuck developing, and then you'll have Eric Comrie coming through the system.
Until he breaks through the glass ceiling with his play, until there's no other option for him. Until he is too good, or any sort of AHL player often is too good at that level, mm-hmm. and they force their way onto the team, as opposed to being, like you said, handed anything or even brought in, and you know, you can't have a Connor Hellebuck, Eric Comrie tandem next season because they're both too young. I think you need a goaltender. Whoever your goaltender is next, that comes in next season, they need to be a guy who, one, is a veteran, and two, will not be fazed by defensive breakdowns. Because I think whatever we see from this Winnipeg Jets team, and you know, we have 6 years of evidence at this point in time, is they tend to have a number of defensive breakdowns more often than not. And I don't know that they've ever had that goaltender, that absolute sort of rock in the net, who is unfazed by defensive breakdowns and will bail out the defensive breakdowns. That's what they need to acquire for next season. And maybe that's a Ben Bishop. Maybe that's a Yaroslav Halak. Maybe that's a Marc-Andre Fleury, if they can get him out of Pittsburgh. That's the guy I would want to see, personally, is Marc-Andre Fleury. But they need that guy who is unfazed by poor defensive play in front of him.
Right, and it's different than in previous years when you knew Andre Pavlik was the number one goaltender and you had Chris Mason and you had Al Montoya and Peter Budaj, and then recently you had Connor Hellebuck and Michael Hutchinson backing up Andre Pavlik. It's a different situation. I think you have to go in with the mindset that the goaltender that you're acquiring could end up playing more games than Hellebuck next
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely.
But if Hellebuck deserves to play more, he'll play more.
Yeah.
But right now we don't know if Connor Hellebuck can play 65 or 70 games a year and give them the goaltending they need. I think he could play 65 or 70 games. The reality
but
is
most
goalies don't play 70 games anymore. The days of Marty Brodeur are long gone.
Yeah.
So even playing 55 or 60 games, but giving them the goaltending that they need, right? Because, again, Hellebuck's numbers are not great, but he's still got 3 shutouts. He's still picked up more wins than any other Jets goaltender. I think Hutchinson and Pavlik combined only have 8 wins, right? So, I mean, Hellebuck has still been a good goaltender for the Jets this year. Don't get me wrong. I'm a fan of his game. I'm not saying that he can't be a more successful goaltender, because I think he will be. But I'm just saying, I think right now the Jets need a veteran in there they know can give them that level of goaltending that they need.
And just think about how different the season would be if you had that person in place this year. I mean, in my mind, and I think most people's minds, the Jets are a playoff team if that happens.
If they had league average goaltending, I think most people would expect they'd be a playoff team.
No question.
And that's, you know, I've said it before on the show, on other shows, that's a fundamental error that Kevin Cheveldayoff made this season. That, you know, that's an X next to his, if you look at his report card for this year, the way he addressed or didn't address the goaltending situation is a big X.
When did you become a teacher?
Well, I'm always educating. I'm educating left, right, and center.
All right.
When you're a parent, you're always an educator, Dave.
Oh, God.
It's head to break when we come back.
Drew, you get a D-minus for that segment.
We'll look ahead to tomorrow afternoon against the Minnesota Wild. We'll touch on Tuesday against the Flyers as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Drew, is this Skrillex? Who is this?
Rory, you know who this is?
Definitely not Skrillex.
I mean, I don't know. EDM guy. Are you going to go? Are you going to Vegas to see some EDM shows?
There could be some EDM.
Yeah.
I may be seeing a little Tiesto.
Do you say Mandy Giroux? Yeah. I know Mandy Hsu. I don't know who Mandy Giroux is. Mandy Hsu,
she's
of course, on our
Claude's
sister
brother.
Station. Claude's brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, big into the music. Anyways,
it's nice. There's a little steel drum in there.
Yeah, you know,
very Jamaica-ish.
The island rhythms are really beating here in the.
Well, it is going to be 10 degrees tomorrow, so.
There you go.
Perhaps
if anyone has Tylenol, please bring it to the studio.
This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. The Jets in the Wild tomorrow afternoon, 4 o'clock. Is that afternoon or evening?
Afternoon still.
Still afternoon?
I think okay. Five up to five is afternoon.
Or would that be evening?
I don't know. Maybe it's early evening.
I know you
or
like the early bird special,
I
Drew,
do.
But...
Like 5 o'clock is not the evening.
I would say that's...
Six o'clock is the evening.
I would say 5 o'clock is the evening.
No.
No? Nope. You think it's a clear six?
If it's 5:30, it's like 5:30 in the afternoon.
Well, let me ask you this. When you come home from work and you take your nap that starts at probably 5 o'clock and ends at 8 o'clock...
I haven't taken a nap in a long time.
Really?
I've been busy.
Planning a wedding. It's amazing. These things are cutting...
Things are happening, Drew.
These things are cutting into your nap schedule.
I don't know what things are happening. Naomi handles all of it, but things are happening.
Minnesota Wild struggling a little bit as of late. No real surprise. I'm not going to read too much into that, given that you know they're clearly in a playoff spot. They're the second-place team in the Central Division. Pretty much locked that up. They still have a chance to catch the Chicago Blackhawks for first. So I'm interested in seeing the Minnesota Wild, though, tomorrow, as this is the first time we've seen them since they acquired Marty Hanzel at the trade deadline.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned that the Wild have been losing some games as of late, and you know they've played some good teams, but that loss against the Carolina Hurricanes, yeah. I think, was one of those losses that really irked Bruce Boudreau. And when you lose to Washington and you lose to Chicago, that's one thing, because I think we'd agree that both of those teams are Stanley Cup favorites. But you're right, Drew. I mean, this is a team that's going to have well over 100 points. And whether or not they win the division, that remains to be seen. Chicago just isn't losing. So this team, I really like the makeup of this team. You mentioned Marty Hanzel. Is that not the perfect acquisition for a team that already has that strength up the middle, right, with Mikko Koivu, and now you've got Marty Hanzel there? Eric Staal was a great free agent acquisition. I don't think anybody expected, guys, the kind of resurgence of Eric Staal, right?
Sure.
Because Eric Staal is a guy that had that early success in his career, but he's really provided, I think, the Minnesota Wild with exactly what they needed. It's taken some pressure off of those younger players. And all of those players that are kind of around that 23, 24 age, Charlie Coyle, Jason Zucker, Nino Niederreiter, Drew, Mikael Granlund being the obvious one, former first-round pick, all of these players have had their breakout years together, and I think that's what has been the difference between this Wild team and the Wild team in previous years. They just didn't have that secondary scoring, right? They were so reliant on their veterans, yeah. You know, the Mikko Koivus, the Zach Parises, Jason Pominville. Pominville has not had a good year, by the way, but when you're talking about the Minnesota Wild, I don't think they really even need him to be the Pominville that used to get, you know, 60-plus points a year, right? They just need him to be part of that supporting cast, but it's a very good defensive team. Devan Dubnyk is probably going to be a Vezina Trophy finalist. So, again, the Wild, it's going to be a tough test for the Jets because, Dave, the Wild are coming in angry, right? They've lost their last three games, and they, I think, want to stay with the Chicago Blackhawks, kind of keep pace with them, and still try to get home ice.
Yeah, and the fact is they've only got two wins in March. They've played eight games, they only have two wins. And you know, when you, any time a team comes in and they've got a bit of a streak going the other way, you know that they're going to be playing a little bit of surly hockey, especially because, A, there's a good rivalry with the Jets, so they always kind of seem to have a nice, like, a physical contest against Winnipeg. And the fact is that, you know, they've got one game in hand in Chicago, but like they had a comfortable lead, and now they've given that up, and Chicago seems to not look like they're going to be looking backwards and only be moving forward. So Minnesota's got a lot of pride, and they've got some tough contests coming up after the Jets. They've got to play the Sharks, and they got to play, you know, the Capitals again, and they got to play the Senators. So they don't have some easy games. So they have to be thinking to themselves, we need to take advantage of these opportunities and kind of put away a team like Winnipeg who you know, at this point is really just playing the role of spoiler.
And have the Wild not already defeated the Jets three times this year?
I think that would be correct if I recall off the top of my head. I think it's either three or four at this point in time.
I know they certainly have had the last game they lost at home.
The Jets did.
Yeah, it was 4-2 Minnesota. That game was just a perfect example. I believe if
four
I'm not
times.
Mistaken.
No, no. Four times.
Yeah, they lost all, I think they,
all four.
All four games.
The last time the Wild came in, I think they played the previous night, too.
The last time was the...
That was that 6-5 game.
That was that 6-5 game where the Jets made the big comeback, and then they couldn't get a, you know, really the Wild had one shot on goal after Hellebuck had been pulled and Hutchinson came in, and they beat Hutchinson with that and scored the game-winning goal with 2 minutes to go or something. I would make the argument that, you know, that game that they just had against
the Wild did play the previous night. They beat LA in overtime, then came into Winnipeg and beat the Jets.
Right.
Yeah. That was the one where they scored with 2:50 to go.
Yeah, exactly. I would make the argument that, you know, that game against Carolina this past week that the Wild lost. Mm-hmm. Bruce Boudreau might not hate that loss. And I'll tell you why. I think it gives him an opportunity to sort of get his team to recalibrate. Because, you know, it's hard to be a team at this stage in the season where you're, I mean, the Wild really aren't playing for a ton. They know that
they're playing for home ice advantage throughout the playoffs, right?
Right.
Well, they're not going to win the President's Trophy, but in the Western Conference playoffs. So yeah. I think they're playing. But honestly, Drew, I don't think they care about that.
I don't think they care about it that much either. So
what
that's
does home ice really mean anymore in the playoffs?
Not
right?
a ton. You see it, not a ton. And so, you know, I can understand why the Wild would start to begin to slip a little bit. And I think that Carolina game, that's a team. I mean, the Minnesota Wild, even if they're not playing at 100%, they should be able to beat the Carolina Hurricanes. I think the problem is they're playing at such a low percentage that the Hurricanes took advantage of it. And so I don't think Bruce Boudreau's terribly upset about that, because I think it gives him an opportunity and gives him an excuse in the course of a long slog of a season, especially this portion of the season where the team is, you know, not playing for a ton. They're pretty much locked into a playoff spot. They're in a good position. Bad habits can creep in. I think this is an opportunity for him to extricate those bad habits from the lineup before they become any too deep-rooted.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see, Drew. Last time the Wild were in town, Darcy Kuemper got the start and he was awful. And the Wild play the Rangers tonight. So it's going to be interesting to see if they go with Dubnyk tonight and then Kuemper gets the start. So the Jets would obviously not get one of the top goaltenders in the league. So maybe they get a little bit lucky there. But Dubnyk could end up playing both of these games.
No way he'll go back-to-back. There'd be no reason for him to go back-to-back. We'll talk to Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild color analyst, coming up at the top of the hour. But I would assume it's going to be Dubnyk tonight in Minnesota and Kuemper for the Jets. Because why would you waste your number one goaltender on?
I was just putting out the possibility. I agree with you. At this point in the season, they've already locked up a playoff spot. I'm just saying, I mean, Dubnyk is a guy that can play a lot of hockey. So it's always a possibility, but I agree. I would expect it to be Kuemper tomorrow.
And
night.
it's a 22-hour.
Sorry, tomorrow afternoon.
I was going to say.
Are you sure it's not evening?
It's a weird start. 4 o'clock is a weird start for a hockey game.
Well, especially considering they play at 6 today, right? So it's only a 22-hour turnaround.
Well, because 22 hours is the minimum.
I prefer a 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock start as opposed to a 4 o'clock start. That's like prime time napping
I have a question. Did they consult you when they made this schedule?
And I disagree entirely, because if it's at 1
if I'm lucky that they let me in the building.
If it's at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, it ruins your whole day. You can't get anything done. You're there all day. You don't have enough time in the morning to do anything. I don't mind a 4 o'clock, even a 5 o'clock Saturday.
Yeah, that's usually Sunday when you're starts. Vacuuming the condo, right?
Well, someone's got a vacuum. Or Laura does the vacuuming, I do the dishes,
and this
Aaron scrubs the walls. You know, it's a real team effort.
This will allow you to take in the moose community.
Just visualizing Aaron scrubbing the walls. Well, Laura's like, comes home and expects that Drew was doing it. Laura's like, what are you doing? Drew's like, I was busy. He's watching March Madness.
And my infant daughter is scrubbing the walls.
Wait till Aaron's like 4 or 5 years old before you start getting her to scrub those walls.
Oh, I'll see about that. I make no promises, though. Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild Radio, a color analyst, joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Mike Greenlay. Mike is a Minnesota Wild analyst. Mike, good morning, and thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. Good to talk to you guys again.
Likewise, Mike. Always appreciate your time. You know, obviously, the Wild make another visit to Winnipeg tomorrow afternoon to face the Jets. You know, we were talking about it in the previous segment that it seems like right now the Wild might be in a bit of a lull, in that they are sort of clearly a playoff team. They're either going to finish first or second in the Central Division. And it seems like they're just sort of playing out the string now, getting ready for the playoffs to begin. And maybe just sort of that lull can explain why they've struggled a little bit over the last 10 games and losers of 3 in a row.
Well, yeah, not only that, losers of 6 of their last 8. That's it's a stretch that they certainly want to arrest as soon as they can, because I think maybe the fact that you do know that they're going to finish first or second, that might have led to some of the some of the play lately. Just it hasn't been a lot of urgency, and the reason why is because they know they're in a good spot. But you can't go into the last portion of the year playing that way, because it really does affect the way you are once you hit the postseason. And even if you win a few games down the stretch, it's more. I mean, they've won a lot of games and they've put themselves in a good position. And even if you win a few games here, it's more right now about how you're playing and how your team meshes and the chemistry going on. Because even if you win a few games and you aren't up to task with how you're playing, then when you hit the postseason, you find very quickly that you've got to raise your game another level. So the whole season has been about trying to get the game and the combination of chemistry together and who's going to play well with whom. And then you can go into the playoffs knowing that you've got a bunch of different scenarios that you can use and a bunch of different lines that you can use. So right now it's really about, yes, it's about winning and losing, but it's also about getting back to your game.
Mike, the Wild acquired Marty Hanzel prior to the NHL trade deadline. I know he's been dealing with the flu bug here. How does he fit into the team, and is he going to play tonight versus the Rangers?
Yeah, you'll probably see him, even if it's a limited basis, just getting back into the lineup here. But oddly enough, his best game came right before he got sick in Florida. He was, played really well. You could see him finally starting to get a bit of a jump and understanding, how the Wild play and the pace that they play at, and just some of the nuances of the game. He's a professional. I mean, he's been around for a long time, but just the way the Wild play, it's not always easy to jump into the pace of play, because they are a team that does, when they're playing well, they play at a high pace. So, I expect him to, maybe see some, not maybe the normal minutes that he would in a game, but just because he's been off for a little while here, I could see him getting in a lineup, but just maybe, catching a fourth line role right now and see how the game goes. I mean, I'm sure if things are going well, you might see Bruce move things around a little bit. You never know, but it's just about getting him back in the lineup and trying to get, again, it's about trying to find the combination of who's going to play with whom and who meshes well in the chemistry. And when you bring in a guy like that, you got to find where things and what players play well with him and how they mesh as a line. Because if you can get that going, then then you're three and four lines deep rather than just relying on one or two lines.
Mike, Eric Staal seems to have had a resurgence in Minnesota, and he looks like he's going to hit career highs or in the highest goal total in the last 5 years for him at least. Is his resurgence symptomatic of the system of the Wild or something else?
Well, I think it has to do with the depth of this team. I mean, when he certainly had choices of where he was going to go and what he wanted to do. And when he looked at the Minnesota Wild, I think he saw a good core. I think he saw a lot of young, good, talented players. I think he saw the fact that this team was going to be able to support him in terms of the style of play. And also, when he came here, he didn't have to be, people look at his numbers in Carolina the last few years. Well, keep in mind that he was in a situation where he had to be the guy all the time. And he, when you have guys that would come in or guys that would get shifted around the lineup or whatnot, they always got put with him because he was the go-to guy. And it's tough to be that one guy all the time. And that's what the benefit of being with the Wild is that you're not always facing the other team's top defenders or top line. You often, because of the depth of the lineup, are able to really be a kind of a support system where maybe one of the other two lines that are scoring are a team or a line that they focus on. He comes here and then he's able to maybe face one of the lower end in lines, and then you can pay dividends. So he came in great shape. He came in with a great attitude, and he is just a true pro. And I'm glad to see him step his game to that level. And like any player, he had a little bit of a swoon there. All players do at some point of the year. And, he's back out of it. His last four or five games have been terrific. He looks very much like the guy he was in the first three quarters of the season. And that bodes well for the Minnesota Wild.
You know, Mike, speaking of Eric Staal, he looks like he's going to hit game number 1,000 against the Jets on Sunday. Do you think Eric Staal gets enough credit for how durable he's been? He has not missed a lot of hockey in his career.
No, I mean, he's he's a big body. He's got a head for the game, so he doesn't put himself into bad situations. But yeah, durability is huge. I mean, when you can get a guy that you can keep in the lineup and the guy that is that effective, I mean, that's one thing you got to look at. I mean, there's been plenty of very good players over the years that, you know, just aren't always in the lineup because they either play a certain way or they just aren't durable people and they get beat up a lot. So it's great to see that he has been durable, and he's not durable because he doesn't use his size. I mean, he's a guy who is physical. He's a guy who uses his size properly. He's very smart about it too, so I think it's certainly been great to see him not only find his game, but to be able to stay healthy and be such a big factor here. Because there was a lot of question marks the last summer when they, when you sign a guy that has, as you mentioned, had a few down years. When you sign a guy like that, and the narrative at the time is, well, you know what, we'd love to see him find that touch and find his game. That usually sends off some flares because now you're thinking, you're looking at a guy to reestablish parts of his game, and it's not always easy to do that. But when he came here, he had the right mindset, the right conditioning, and the right type of lineup to support his game, and so he has. He's had a resurgence, and he's been healthy.
Mike Greenlay is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike is a Minnesota Wild color analyst. Mike, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, because we wouldn't want to pay short shrift to whoever is going to be their first round opponents, but it does look like if everything goes to plan, the Minnesota Wild and the Chicago Blackhawks will be on a collision course to meet each other in the division finals. How does this Minnesota Wild team match up against the Blackhawks? We know, I believe, that they are 1-2-1 against them so far this season. Over the course of a 7-game series, how do these two teams sort of match up against one another?
That's interesting because they've faced each other, and it's always been a depth issue in the playoffs for the Wild against Chicago. And the last time they faced each other in the playoffs. They've done it so a few times now, so it's always been a situation where you're saying, well, if the Wild could only have that extra depth in their third and fourth lines, they would be able to roll lines, match up, and do a better job in that department, and not always have their go-to guys be the guys that are being checked all the time, and then. There's been plenty of times where Chicago's third line is the one that was beating the Wild because, the top two lines would match up and maybe even shut each other down for the most part. And then a third line would step in there and win the game for Chicago. It just seemed to happen too often. So I think the Wild can match up in that department now. They can show that they have depth. And I think it would be one heck of a series. I think everyone... as you said, you can't get too far ahead, but I think that if you're going to sit here and look forward, you have to say that in all likelihood, if you're going to get to where you want to be, you're going to have to go through Chicago. That's just that's just the way it seems to play out here, given the fact that they have some tremendous players and they have a tremendous team that knows how to win and they're used to winning and they know what to do in tough situations. All those factors, I think everyone agrees that they're going to have to go through Chicago in order to get somewhere eventually. So it would be fun to see that, and I'm sure that the Wild would welcome that just because, to be the best, you want to beat the best, and sometimes, you're going to have to face that. So we'll see how it plays out. I mean, there's still a lot of hockey left this year, and there's obviously a lot of hockey left even in the first round, there's going to be some pretty good matchups.
Mike, over the years, we've had you on many times on the show talking about the Wild. We've talked to you a lot about Ryan Suter, and when you consider only two players have played more than Ryan Suter this year, and he's got the second-best plus-minus in the league. Second best plus minus on his team. Jason Zucker's number one at plus 33. Suter's plus 32. And I realize the analytics guys don't like the plus minus stat. But do you think Ryan Suter should be getting more consideration for how good of a defenseman he is? Maybe some Norris Trophy consideration. We know that Brent Burns is most likely going to win it this year. But do you think he gets enough credit for just truly how good of a shutdown defenseman he is?
You know what? It's interesting because, you know, this conversation comes up every year. And it comes up every year in regards to the awards that are handed out. What are they handed out for? Because, you know, if you're handing out a trophy for best defenseman, then you're, you know, and I understand that, you know, that something that gains a lot of attention is how you contribute on the offensive side of things, because scoring goals wins games. But, you know, it brings up the question. If you're an offensive defenseman, is that more important than being, you know, an all-around guy that, and as you mentioned, has a great plus-minus? I mean, fine, plus-minus, as far as a stat is concerned, may not mean a ton to some people, but when it gets that lopsided, then you really start to look at it. And I just think, you know, you got to get to watch him play every game. And just the way he manages the game in his own end is truly remarkable. I mean, he is a guy that I really think could play till he's 50, just because he doesn't get himself into positions to get blown up a lot. He manages the puck really well. He manages his leverage and body position really well in the end, in his own zone. He always seems to come out of the corner with a puck. I mean, there's so many elements to his game that just don't appear on the stat sheet, but you know, I get it. I mean, awards typically fall in the realm of you know, where the stat sheet is, and the same thing goes with the Selke Trophy. I mean, Mikko Koivu should be highly considered for that award every year, but you know, this year especially, and you know, but inevitably it'll probably go to guys who have more points rather than maybe guys who defend better. So it's you know, it's a good argument, but I think he always should be considered for sure.
Like, staying in the same vein of players who are not necessarily getting the recognition they deserve, Mikael Granlund is having just a phenomenal season for the Wild. He's, I think, 11th overall in the NHL in scoring. His shooting percentage has doubled from what it's previously been. Is he getting enough recognition around the NHL right now for what he's done this year in Minnesota?
I think so. There's no more secret Mikael Granlund. I mean, you know, he could disappear a lot when he was playing center. It was kind of a tough spot. He's not a really big player. He's not a really big guy. And, you know, any centerman in the National Hockey League has responsibilities in his own end that the wingers certainly don't. And so the freedom alone to put him on the wing and, you know, bringing in a guy like Staal did that. Trying Charlie Coyle the last few years at center, even though Charlie Coyle's played wing a lot this year mostly, just having those options allowed you to take Granlund and put him where he probably should be, and that is on the wing. And boy, he flourished there. I mean, the freedom to create, the freedom to go north-south rather than east-west a lot, the freedom to, you know, to use his speed, all those things have given Mikael Granlund the kind of freedom that he needs to be an effective player. And then when you put him on the line with a guy like Mikko Koivu, who they always know is going to be the good two-way forward, the strong in the face-off circle type player, that makes Mikael Granlund even better. And then when you have the resurgence of Jason Zucker, who also is a speedy, creative player, I mean, that line has pretty much been untouched since just after Thanksgiving. And there's a reason for it, because not only do they get points, but they're a shutdown line. A lot due to the fact that they have the puck a lot, so it's been a great trio, and Mikael Granlund is having a tremendous season.
Mike Greenlee covers the Minnesota Wild. He's a television analyst for them. Mike, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow in Winnipeg.
Looking forward to it, guys. Take care.
Take care, Mike. Thanks
a lot, Mike.
Let's head to break. When we return, a new name has emerged in the race for the Hart Trophy. Talk about him next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Marchand sneaks it behind everyone. takes over the points lead from McDavid, who has something to say about that. Tries to bank it in off Tukarask. Anton Slepyshev bats it out of the air, and McDavid pulls even with Marchand. A three-point game this season, 7-3 Edmonton. Marchand not going away. He tees up David Krejci for the blast. Marchand's third point of the night, and it was 7-4 after 40.
20 minutes after the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That new name entering into the discussion for the Hart Trophy is none other than Brad Marchand of the Boston Bruins. On an absolute tear, playing probably the best hockey of his career, is up to now 79 points, equal that of Connor McDavid. McDavid having played one fewer game. Just an incredible performance as of late for Brad Marchand. And, I mean, certainly if he gets the Boston Bruins into the playoffs, as they currently are in the Atlantic Division, and look likely that they're going to be a playoff team in the Atlantic Division, he's going to get some consideration for the Hart Trophy.
Yeah, and he should. I mean, it's unbelievable to think that he might hit 90 points this year, but it was really his breakout year last year that continued with the World Cup of Hockey, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Brad Marchand was playing on the top line with Sidney Crosby and Patrice Bergeron. So Brad Marchand isn't just an okay player. I mean, Brad Marchand is a top forward in the league now. And I think, you know, he deserves all of this recognition. And I realize Brad Marchand isn't the most popular player, and a lot of Habs fans aren't really big fans of Brad Marchand, obviously, with the rivalry between the Habs and Bruins. But, I mean, this guy, to me, is the real deal complete hockey player, right? Like, he'll go into the corners, he'll dig up the puck, he can set plays up, he can score goals. He's going to easily hit 40 goals this year, Drew.
Yeah.
So Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci, those are the guys that got more of the credit, I think, when the Bruins won the Cup back in 2011, along with Zdeno Chara and other players, obviously. Milan Lucic was a big part of that. But when you're talking about Brad Marchand, not bad for a third-round pick, right? I mean, this is a guy who I think everybody just assumed would kind of be one of those 25-goal, 50-point players at the NHL level. But now you're talking about a guy who, as you said, he could legitimately win the Art Ross Trophy.
Well, he's certainly tied with Connor McDavid right now. In his last 30 games, he has 27 goals.
He's a goal machine.
I mean, and
he's a sniper.
He is a sniper, and you're absolutely right. He's going to get 40. He's going to get more than 40 goals this season. But what's most impressive is that he's got 42 assists so far this year, which are 14 more than his previous career high.
Right.
I mean, he
Well, that's the thing, Drew. He's more of a complete player, and I think he really did benefit from playing with players of Sidney Crosby's ilk. Because, again, I still think Sidney Crosby is the best overall player in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily think that Brad Marchand will end up winning the Hart Trophy, because I think it'll most likely go to one of McDavid, Crosby, or Brent Burns. But certainly you could make a strong argument that Brad Marchand isn't a step below those players in terms of what he means to the team, right? I mean, this is a guy, if the Bruins do go far in the playoffs, most likely Brad Marchand will be front and center. He's going to be the guy that's scoring all the goals, right?
He's their best player right now. I mean,
first Bruins player to hit consecutive 30-goal season since?
Phil Esposito?
Nope. Former mayor of Winnipeg?
Sam Cates?
No, Glenn Murray. A little Bruins trivia there
for
you.
Yeah,
I was actually going to go with Brian Bowman, but
well, you know, he's the current mayor of Winnipeg.
Yeah, I said former.
He said former. In any event, and that's the problem with Marchand, is that I don't think he's ever going to. He's going to get credit for being a terrific player, because he certainly is, but no one is going to ever, I think, forgive his past transgressions.
Well, you should.
It was just this season.
No, it's a little. He had two slew foots.
Within the last 3 months. I mean, they weren't that many
he
months
plays
ago.
The game on the edge.
That's the
no
way
question.
He plays, Drew. I mean,
he plays the game on the edge.
Well, that's why
he's like a Bobby Clark. I mean, we know what Bobby Clark did in the 72 Summit Series, but he has two Stanley Cup rings, right? I mean, he's a guy that, you know, he'd whack you on the ankles if he needed to. Brad Marchand does whatever he needs to do to win. And again, I like that type of hockey player. I mean, I come from the Claude Lemieux school of hockey. I love the way Claude Lemieux plays the game, and I realize that, you know, the article came out in Players Tribune. What he did to Chris Draper was, I mean, it was despicable. I mean, and it was, I think, you know, at this point, Chris Draper mentions in the article he's forgiven Claude Lemieux. Brad Marchand, guys, is kind of that modern-day Claude Lemieux. I mean, he plays with an edge. And again, you know, does he sometimes get himself into trouble? And is he a quote-unquote dirty player? Sometimes he is. But you know what? I'd love to have him on my team.
Yeah, I would love to have him on my team too, because you don't get 40 goal scorers every day that grow on trees. But it really is turning into a fascinating Hart Trophy race this year.
It's one of the best we've seen in a long
time.
One
player who seems to probably merit a little bit of mention is Erik Karlsson. I mean, for what he's doing in Ottawa right now, and it's amazing to me that he's actually not getting a lot of. Like, a lot of people aren't speaking about him because
I think it just hurts him that Burns is putting up more points, so people kind of look at Karlsson.
But that's the whole point,
like,
right?
Well, we did talk about Karlsson as a potential Norris Trophy. We talked about that on midweek on Wednesday.
Dave, Karlsson, 70 points, that's like a down year.
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm just saying, like, it's amazing to me because if you think about it, he's had to change his game under his coach, and he's chosen to change his game and make it a little more effective. And if you think about it, this is a Senators team that right now is challenging the Habs. And if it wasn't for Erik Karlsson, where would this team be?
They wouldn't be a playoff team.
Without Craig Anderson and Mike Gordon, I
wouldn't go that far and say they wouldn't be a playoff team. I don't know that they would or wouldn't. But
well, without Erik Karlsson, I don't think they'd be a playoff team.
But that's the whole point. Think about that. Think about that statement. If you believe that, then think about how impactful
and the supporting cast in San Jose, Dave, is much better, right?
Yeah, of course.
Joe Pavelski, Joe Thornton, Logan Couture, Patrick Marleau.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark-Edward Vlasic.
Yeah.
I mean, Dion Phaneuf is a good defenseman, but Mark-Edward Vlasic is a better defenseman
of course
than Dion Phaneuf.
And that's
right?
I'm just saying, like, it's just interesting because he's modified his game and he really has single-handedly made those Senators a very dangerous team. Although it's interesting because even just a little while ago, before the Bruins really turned it up, we were talking about the Senators and Bruins potentially facing each other and, you know, how that would not be the most difficult of challenges. But there could be the two hottest teams in that division
now. Speaking, though, guys, of players that are now in the Hart Trophy consideration, to me, it's flabbergasting why nobody's talking about Patrick Kane. I mean, Patrick Kane is right up there with Connor McDavid and Brad Marchand, and it's just like, Patrick Kane
behind.
Being Patrick Kane, but nobody seems to mention him as far as being a Hart Trophy finalist. Why isn't he in there?
Look, you can make a ton of different arguments this year. I mean, Evgeny Malkin leads the NHL in points per games played. He's got 72 points in only 62 games. I mean, he's up to a 1.16 points per game clip.
And he's like an afterthought,
Drew? He's slightly behind Crosby. I misspoke there. He's slightly behind Crosby, but I mean, right.
It's the best Hart Trophy race maybe we've seen in the last 20 years.
It's a fantastic race, and I think it goes back to sort of what Bob McKenzie, I think he wrote an article about it on TSN.ca a few weeks back, talking about should the Hart Trophy go to the most outstanding player as opposed to the most valuable player, because there is a bit of a distinction between
the two.
Right,
but it's called the most valuable player, right? Like,
right.
I mean, that's the name of the trophy, and so if you're going to, I mean, again, it shouldn't just go to the guy who has the most points.
No,
right?
It shouldn't go to the Art Ross Trophy winner necessarily.
Right.
But
it often does, though.
It often does, but there's sometimes, you know, people that can get hung up on the. I mean, it's a bit of a semantic argument between most valuable and most outstanding.
It's a tough year for a goalie to win it. Let's put it that way.
Well, because, you know, Devin Dubnyk and Braden Holtby could be in the conversation, but the way these guys are putting up numbers and how it's going to come down to, I mean, that's sort of something to watch for over the last 12 games of the season. If you're looking for storylines to keep you interested, is the Art Ross Trophy. You got four guys within 2 points of the lead there. And, I mean, for me, it's still Sidney Crosby because what he's done, he's got 77 points in 64 games, guys. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's incredible.
In
any other year, you would probably just say, okay, give Sid the trophy. It's yours.
Yeah.
But in a year like this year, when you've got Patrick Kane doing what he's doing, you've got Connor McDavid doing what he's doing, a lot of good players right now. Brent Burns, I mean, how do you not give Brent Burns at least one of the three spots as a finalist, right?
It's a very difficult voting year for those who have the honor to vote on that award. On Wednesday's NHL This Week, we spoke about Ben Raby and his proposal to change the NHL playoff format. We'll speak to Ben himself coming up next. Here are more details about his proposal, one that I found to be quite interesting. We'll talk about that next. Is it time to change the playoff format, and does Ben's suggestion hold water with you? It's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN.